Hey y'all, it's Lauren. As we continue our season on environmental racism, we wanted to tell the stories of the people who are at the heart of the movement, urban farmers. In St. Louis, urban farmers have made great strides and continue to educate the next generation about the importance of growing their own food. To help us understand the hard work that goes into farming, we took a trip to a farm in Florissant, a town in North St. Louis County, to see for ourselves.
So we start off here in the morning and try to get everything done over here, and then we'll go to another location, at least one other. We used to do two locations a day, unless we got like a major job to do. And next week we'll start off in the morning in the city, because we got to get the city together. So we just rotate. Whatever spot needs us there.
The farm is owned by Tyran Heyru Lewis of Heyru Urban Farming and Garden. Heyru has a total of three farms, one in the city of St. Louis and two in North St. Louis County. As a former PE and health teacher, he takes his role as an educator seriously and continues to use those skills by providing internships and employment opportunities to young people through the St. Louis Agency on Training and Employment, or SLATE.
I'm allotted 10 workers. I think I got about three or four of them that signed up already. So trying to get more, ages 17 to 27. They need a job. They go down to SLATE and say they want to work for me, and then they just put the application process, $12 an hour, and they come work for me. Yeah. So I'm excited about that. See, when April roll in, I have all my staff here.
We were able to speak with Ernest Wills, one of Heyru's current interns, about his experience working at the farm.
I've been with Heyru Urban Farming for about 3 weeks now. I do have experience as a gardener. I've been gardening for about 5 years now. I think this is my sixth season gardening. And I saw Tyran at Heyru Urban Farming on Facebook last year, and I reached out to him to see if he had any mentorship programs, because I want to do what he's doing. And he said he had a spot for me, took me on, and hey, we've been working. We've been getting a lot of work done this season.
And Anaya, a young volunteer that Heyru met in 2014 at a protest in Ferguson.
What's going on with you?
Nothing.
Get ready to get, can I use your good hands?
Yeah.
All right. Well, here you go.
Planting some seeds?
Yeah, we're going to put them inside the greenhouse, so we're going to walk over there.
And they discussed their favorite parts about the growing process.
This is one of my favorite parts, planting.
Yeah. I love touching the dirt.
Yeah. Favorite part. I like harvesting too, of course, but this part I like.
After touring the farm, we sat down with Heyru to discuss his passion for farming and the importance of Black farmers in the environmental movement. And he says that access to healthy food motivates him to continue the work of Heyru Urban Farming and Garden.
I believe food apartheid is what we're going through here, and it's different because I believe food apartheid is deliberately done. I believe that they deliberately set us up in situations in our community where the property value drops down and we can have enough things to support ourselves. Like, it's 1,000 gas stations on every corner. You know, you go to suburbs, you don't see that. You don't see liquor stores in every other corner. You don't see all these unhealthy things around you that close. We just won't see it. And I think we just overlooked that. And some of us just like, okay, this is how it is. When you go out there, man, you're like, your liquor stores is like in a grocery store or something like that, like in a suburb. You're not going to see that. Like, wow, like, is that many people drinking this much? We don't need that many, you know? And tire shops everywhere. Just all that is designed, I believe, just to bring you down.
This is why Heyru believes his work brings a breath of fresh air to the community and helps people understand the benefits of gardening.
I love to see people just situations change, like attitude change, just like, you know, I think food does that, you know, and I think gardening does that as well. When you put your hand in the soil, and it's very therapeutic, but it feels good to feel like that I was, filling a void in the community.
And as an educator, he loves when kids come to the farm and learn something new.
When the kids come over, not just kids come, I have nursing students come, you know, different that, but I just like, my first thing I like is so they can see something like that in the hood. So I like that, number one. When they come, they're like, oh, man, this is dope. This is right here in the hood. I'm like, all right. But just letting them, I like to see the faces when they find out something new. For example, when I was coming up, I didn't eat zucchini. I didn't know about beets, stuff like that. I probably I probably knew about it, maybe. I don't even remember, but I know I definitely didn't eat it. My mom definitely didn't prepare it. So I think that's just cool for them to know a different crop, you know, tasting some raw okra, you know, just learning different things and just seeing they face light up, you know. When you know when someone light bulb go off in their head, you know it hit them, right? They get that reaction like, oh yeah, you know, yeah, so that's cool. And just the feedback, you know. And yeah, and let them just, you know, and I let them get their little, you know, their free taste test, you know, with tomatoes and stuff. But I like to talk about the beneficial plants too, you know. So so I talk about stuff like marigolds, why I use the marigolds, you know, to bring the beneficial bugs, to eat the bad bugs. I talk about the mint, how I use mint to keep away you know, my possums or my raccoons. How I use the Irish Spring soap for stuff. So just different tricks, and let them know you always gotta, you know, use pesticides, things of that nature, and just, you know, just teach them about the history of certain crops too, and, you know, and how to prepare it. I think that's cool. I think if you know how to prepare it, you'll be more likely to grow it and eat it. Cause that's just one of the main things people don't know. If you're not used to something, you know, I know we got Google and things of that nature, but I just think nothing like having a person tell you like how to prepare something and show you.
But Black farmers like Heru often don't get the support or resources needed to continue to bring fresh and nutritious food to their communities. And according to The Atlantic, the dispossession of 98% of Black agricultural landowners in America is a part of a racial injustice that is hugely important but mostly overlooked.
I don't think we ever got support from government, man. Even started like what makes me feel this way is, first of all, we the farmers. And I hate when they say Black people don't farm. White people don't farm. No, we the farmers. We started that. We built America with farming. We taught them how to farm. We taught people how to do that. You know what I'm saying? That's what it was. They just brought technology and make it better. And they came up with all these different laws and loopholes and stuff to get your land taken.
As more and more small Black farmers lose their land and resources, they become almost obsolete. And even though there is a misconception that the environmental movement is a white movement, Heru believes other structural and economic factors keep Blacks from being at the forefront.
It might be a white privilege movement. And the reason why I'm saying that, because like, I think this guy, I am not trying to make it sound bad, but I think people in the neighborhood or these communities got maybe other stuff to worry about, and they're not really thinking about that. So what I mean by that is they got to worry about how they're going to eat, how they're going to survive, how they not going to be looked at this type of way. Is the police going to bother them? I got this struggle. There's just so many stressors that take the back burner, if that makes sense. So, you know, and I just that's just what I believe. That's why it's that issue. But I just think we need to push more to that, you know, as leaders and as community people. Like, no one talks about litter in the community for real. I mean, you got the signs up there, if you see a sign to say that in our community. But anyway, so I just think that's not really something. It's just not on the agenda, you know? And so I don't know if it's a white movement. It's a people movement. It should be. But I just think it's a white privilege kind of thing right now, just because they got the time to do that and maybe the resources.
That's why he is hoping to create a more healthy and loving community that will empower the next generation of Black growers.
I just want to create, a vibrant life, you know? And that's just with everything. That's like community-wise. You know, bringing life to that, bringing life to what you eat, to yourself. We need a lot of healing, you know. I just think everybody need healing, and good food can help that healing, you know. It's all together. But it's just healing, man. I think I heal ourselves before you try to heal somebody else, to be honest with you. You know, that's my answer. You heal yourself, then everything can be cool, because a lot of hurt people out here. And then sometimes you hurt others. So I just believe just concentrate on ourselves, make sure you're doing the right thing, I'm doing the right thing. If you make sure you doing what you gotta do, throw away your trash, say hi to your neighbor, tell somebody, I like your smile today, I like your hair today, just little simple stuff to build confidence. I think that'll be contagious.
Heru emphasizes the need for healing and community awareness to help combat environmental racism and food apartheid. But what can we do to help support the small urban farmers working hard to provide healthy food to our communities? We hope that environmental advocates and urban farmers like Heru can help us find the answer to that question. So in this episode, we hear from a food justice director advocating for a healthier environment and the founder of a nonprofit that provides equitable access to food, education, and employment. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, This is We Live Here. As Black farmers continue to lose land and lack resources to continue their work, their contributions to agriculture and food justice are at risk of being diminished. Locally, environmental groups in the St. Louis region employ few or no people of color, even though there are areas of the St. Louis region that are close to half Black. That's why we spoke to Tasha Phoenix, a former food justice organizer for the Missouri Coalition for the Environment, or MCE, and an outspoken champion for Black farmers. During her time with MCE, she noticed the lack of diversity in the local food justice movement and struggled to make her ideas heard. So in November 2020, she created Evolve, a St. Louis-based food justice organization where Black growers could thrive and mentor other young Black growers.
One of the things that I noticed was that the face of urban ag in St. Louis was white. But when I started growing, that wasn't my reality. My reality was that with Black people who laid this foundation, that taught me how to grow, that were in charge of community gardens. There was a grocery store in Baden called Yours Market. That's where I learned how to grow. It was a Black-owned grocery store in the middle of the hood. And so that's where I learned how to grow. And so in that, I'm like, man, this narrative being pushed, it's incorrect. Not only is it incorrect about who's growing food, but it's also incorrect from a standpoint of community, right? So one of the things that from a community standpoint that was incorrect was that the issue was of corner stores. This is why I said I'm intentional about food justice, because when you talk about food justice, we can't just look at it and say, hey, putting a food pantry here is enough. Or, hey, putting fresh fruits and vegetables in a corner store is enough. We have to deal with systematic racism that has allowed for these things to even be put in place.
She believes that dismantling systemic racism is a major step toward healthy food access, and why she wants Black farmers to be at the forefront of the food justice movement.
There was no conversation about Black farmers. So everybody was at the table, they were like, hey, we're going to feed the Black community, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. But no one was talking about who they were going to get the food from. They weren't talking about that. And so I pushed the narrative of Black farmers.
Then Tasha had the opportunity to present for Miss Lily Clay, head of the Fairgrounds Park Neighborhood Association and other community members in the North St. Louis City neighborhood, about her model for rebuilding the North Side. And it showed her just how much environmental and structural racism has affected her community.
I said, Miss Lily, what would it look like if the community owned their own grocery store? And she was kind of skeptical in her response. I said, well, let me show you. So I took her to City Greens and I showed her a model. And she was excited. And so I got ready to do the presentation. I'm getting the presentation up for the community. I'm doing it, right? And I go to the meetings and I present for them. And everybody, all the women in the meeting are excited. It's one man. She turns and she said, you're the only man here. What do you think? He says, yeah. It sounds good, but is it going to happen? Right? Man, it was so much hopelessness in his voice, but I didn't get offended. I reflected on it because it shows you hopelessness that we are left with in North City. People that look like us, that stand in front of us and lie to our faces and tell us this is what we're going to do for you. The victim blaming that happens without ever putting accountability on the system, the people who uphold the system, the people who rape and pillage our communities, never happens. And so why I am so adamant about food justice being defined and building accurate food justice here because this isn't big ag coming into our communities as saviors feeding us. This isn't even white farmers coming into our community saving us. This is our community connecting with Black growers in the community and Black rural farmers who don't have a market, and a community that don't have grocery stores willing to come in, but who have the talents and the resources to be able to do the things that they need for themselves. Why I focus on Black farmers in this region specifically is very intentional and strategic, because I got into doing this work and I looked around and I said, wow, no white farmers get resources, right? The international farmers have resources as well. The International Institute bought them a farm, but Black farmers don't have those resources. We can't even get the city to sell us land that they've sat on for 30 years to do a community garden. And the only reason why they want to buy the land, because the model and the method of sharecropping is being recreated constantly, right? So the city own it, you release it, but when somebody's ready to build, everything is over with. How fair is that? That's like really the scope of my work. It is allowing both farmers and community to take control of their food system. It is using food pantries for what they're supposed to be used for, emergency uses. It is getting community to think and work collectively. It is advertisement that isn't anti-Black racism in the food system. It is also land ownership, and it's being able to be in control of the food system at every stage for our community. That's food justice.
Working for the Missouri Coalition for the Environment also gave her clarity on the differences between environmentalism and environmental justice.
Environmentalism is fighting for the recreational environment. Environmental justice is fighting for people's built environment. Typically, those who are fighting for the recreational environment don't have to worry about their built environment being bad. Food is a necessity. Air is a necessity. Water is a necessity. All of those things are polluted.
And oftentimes, your built environment doesn't leave you with too many choices.
I always tell people that it's not that people are choosing not. Their choice has actually been taken away from them. So they don't even have a choice. It's the illusion of choice. Because when you go into a corner store, I'm not choosing between a bag of chips and an orange. I'm choosing between Flamin' Hot Cheetos and Flamin' Funyuns. That's the choice.
And food access isn't the only environmental issue facing her community.
Nobody in the hood wants to see the hood looking like that, right? It's not that people want to see trash in the alley, right? But if no one comes and get it for a whole summer, where am I supposed to throw my trash, right? And because we've seen political figures and systems work against us, you kind of like, what's the point of calling? You know what I'm saying? And so what I think is happening with environmental justice, food justice, those are two things that really haven't been a priority to fight here, right? And when I say a priority, I mean like the way that it's coming and being delivered now, like real environmental justice, the way that we seeing it be done now, the creativeness to it, it's like, yeah. So it's just something that's happened that we haven't seen here, right? Or that has been buried here, and now we're seeing the reemergence.
The reemergence of accurate environmental justice is motivating her to continue on as she hopes to one day see her community owned by the people who live there.
The environment that I'm hoping to create, one that isn't food apartheid, one that we can live, grow, play in, you know, like so we can be comfortable in, one that We don't have to be breathing in toxic fumes. We don't have to be over-policed. We don't have to have spoiled food, outdated food. We don't have to walk in corner stores and feel unsafe. Ultimately, minds that I'm building for the environment is ones that community-owned, community-controlled, community-owned, just community at the center, at the heart of it.
Food justice organizers like Tasha are working to make St. Louis a hub for urban agriculture. So up next, we hear from the founder of a nonprofit who is building a space where Black children can commune with nature and empowering the next generation of growers. One of the most important parts of the food justice movement is motivating and teaching the next generation to grow food. So we are introducing you to Nick Speed, founder of Ujima, a St. Louis-based nonprofit providing equitable access to food, education, and employment. But Nick isn't your traditional farmer. He didn't learn how to farm from older relatives. His journey to farming began in 2016 when he served as an AmeriCorps volunteer at Earth Dance Organic Farm School in Ferguson, Missouri.
I was very much learning on the fly. Fortunately, I had a lot of amazing coworkers there who imparted their knowledge on me. And so I just learned so much. It was kind of like a crash course in organic farming. And I just knew that I had to find a way to stay in those spaces. And I knew I wanted something better for St. Louis. And I didn't really know how that was gonna look, but eventually it turned into me creating Ujima. And so I started Ujima in 2018, and it was really because I wanted to create an organization that combined the passions of food justice, taking care of the planet, and empowering the next generation.
Empowering the next generation is a primary focus of Ujima, and he says it's because he enjoyed watching children learn.
I just thought it was amazing to see Black kids running around organic farm, feeding chickens, getting their hands in the soil, eating fresh herbs right out of the ground. It was just indescribable, just like that feeling.
But because most of the neighborhoods where Black and brown children live are food apartheid areas, they don't always get the opportunity to immerse themselves in agriculture.
When we talk about something that's done intentionally, that creates more of a sense of urgency in terms of we have to fix and right this wrong and restore and start healing our communities. For me, I think that was one of the reasons why I decided on Ujima as the name. So for those who aren't familiar, Ujima is a Swahili word that means collective work and responsibility. And it's one of the seven principles of Kwanzaa. And so when you think about these issues that are really plaguing our society, it's going to take a collective of individuals who believe in something bigger than themselves and are not thinking in this me mindset, me and my immediate family, but how can we improve our community? Because, you know, if there is lack in our community in any form or fashion, that is a lack in our entire community. Framing it in that way, I think, cause more of a sense of like a call to action, I think, and really puts the ownership on us and the folks who have that privilege to support others.
And oftentimes there is a disconnect between food justice and social justice. But Nick says we have to look at those issues holistically.
Black liberation has been put into a kind of a box. It is going to require several different solutions. Unfortunately, the protesting has gotten the most coverage and the most views from a majority of society. But I think that there are so many other components to that, whether we're talking about food justice, whether we're talking about environmental justice, we need to look at this from a holistic lens. The food that we eat has a direct correlation on our health. The fact that you have entire communities that don't have access to a grocery store or fresh food means that the little food that they are consuming is not great quality, which will lead to negative health effects down the road. When we look at it that way, food justice, farming while Black, environmental justice, all of it are pieces to the puzzle. And then to the legislation piece, keeping these politicians accountable. I think all of it is very much needed, and all of these arenas have to continue moving forward in order for Black liberation to be possible in America. There needs to be a whole nother level of accountability, especially when it comes to white supremacy and righting the wrongs, not just in the history, but the wrongs that are currently happening today. And so I definitely think it starts with accountability. And then I think it takes us believing in something bigger than ourselves. Unfortunately, capitalism has created this individual society, and it's just like me. And it's so unfortunate, because the reality is when one of us suffers, we all suffer, right? And so if one area is devastated by environmental racism, then the entire St. Louis is devastated by environmental racism. And I think until we change our thinking towards humanity and how we treat each other, I think we're a ticking time bomb.
And Nick is holding himself accountable to the next generation of growers by implementing an apprenticeship program this year.
The goal is to have 3 high school students, 2 college students. They'll work with us 10 hours a week. We'll be teaching them about agriculture, culinary, entrepreneurship. We wanted to create opportunities for you to pick up these skills so they can get a job, so they can start their own business, working to heal the communities that have been affected by environmental racism, whether that's doing neighborhood cleanup, whether that's reducing food waste through composting. Those type of principles that I think are really missing with the next generation. And so I'm super excited to be able to connect with amazing chefs and organizations within St. Louis that are really passionate about doing better by the St. Louis community and really wanting St. Louis to win. So we've been really fortunate, and we are very much driving the car and building it at the same time, but we're taking it a day at a time, and I'm so excited for what we have upcoming this year for sure.
And his passion for motivating the youth is pushing him forward every day to create a more equitable society.
I want the next generation to have the opportunity to be productive citizens who have equitable opportunities to purchase land, to establish careers, whatever that looks like, and to be seen and heard. And I think we deserve to live in a world in which homelessness is not an issue. Environmental racism is an issue. Poverty and hunger is an issue. I think we deserve better as a human species, especially because I have a daughter now. She'll be 14 months this week. Not just thinking about her, but then also thinking about all of the kids that I work with and knowing that they deserve so much better. And just me wanting to leave this earth in a better place than I found it, I think that's one of the driving forces for me. And when I see, especially Black youth and working with them, you know, I see myself learning the things that I've learned along the way. And I feel like I took a lot of detours to get to where I'm at. But I think anytime I have an opportunity to impart that knowledge and share my mistakes with youth so they can have a better path, I'll always work to do that. And yeah, it's all about them, because they are the future. And I feel like they are the ones who have the ingenuity and the innovation to fix this mess that we are currently in. So we gotta do right by them.
This show is produced by me, Lauren Brown, and lead producer Jolianne Yang. St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.